This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. This week, two gigantic Trump stories were slated to occur simultaneously on opposite sides of the globe, both fundamentally about our president, though in one case in absentia, and both so keenly anticipated that many media watchers predicted that cable news would have to present them on a split screen.
The event in Hanoi with the president incarnate was his second meeting with Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un. Last year, they captured the world's attention with Trump's charm offensive in Singapore. This year, he sought to recapture some of that magic and to finish what he never actually started, taking a big step towards North Korea's denuclearization. It was a big fizzle on both counts.
That's right. It's over. And there was no deal to curb North Korea's nuclear weapons program.
This time we decided not to do any of the options, and we'll see where that goes.
Some say the deal failed because Trump was woefully, willfully unprepared. As for the magic, it was gone. Not that the audience doesn't enjoy some improv or a high wire act, but there's much less appetite for reruns. And there was a hot ticket live show right here at home. Michael Cohen, Trump's former personal lawyer, in an all-day engagement before the House Oversight Committee.
The fact-checkers and the news analysts have had their way with it, but the drama worked its way into the amygdala and hippocampus of every viewer who thrilled or quailed or mostly cringed at the spectacle but found it hard to turn away. It was monotonous sometimes, since some committee members were reading from the same page, but it was gripping, and it was also familiar. A popular genre, a procedural, with a dash of movie mob melodrama thrown in. The organized crime type of language has kind of been a theme throughout this presidency.
I know all about flipping. For 30, 40 years, I've been watching flippers. Everything's wonderful, and then they get 10 years in jail, and they flip on whoever the next highest one is.
And then there's Michael Cohen talking about threatening people on Wednesday.
How many times did Mr. Trump ask you to threaten an individual or entity on his behalf?
Quite a few times.
50 times?
More.
100 times?
More.
200 times?
More.
500 times?
Probably.
And a lot of people have made this observation. Nicholas Pileggi, who penned screenplays for Goodfellas and Casino. He told the New York Times that it rang such a bell with him that Trump was surrounded by these people. Being raised in that environment, it was normalized to him.
At the same time, I was actively negotiating in Russia for him. He would look me in the eye and tell me there's no Russian business.
I do take your point about mob movies. When Cohen was testifying on Wednesday about how Trump would tell him how to testify without actually telling him how to testify.
He doesn't give you questions. He doesn't give you orders. He speaks in a code. And I understand the code because I've been around him for a decade.
That sounded familiar.
Did you ever get such an order directly from Michael Corleone?
No, I never talked to him.
It was so Willy Cheechy, the Corleone family soldier who in Godfather Part II was testifying before what looked very much like the Kefauver Committee on Organized Crime.
Mr. Cheechy, could you amplify your answer a bit, please?
Do what?
Was there always a buffer involved? Is someone in between you and your possible superiors who gave the actual order?
Right, yeah, buffer. The family had a lot of buffers.
Yeah. Interesting side note, Bob. The Kefauver hearings were televised live back in 1951, and they were a blockbuster. I was reading about them. Women, they said, neglected their housework. 30 million people tuned in.
At New York's federal building, alleged overlord of gambling, Frank Costello, arrives to face the senatorial gambling probe. Frank Erickson, convicted bookmaker, is also on hand.
And then later that year, Americans chose the committee chairman, C. Estes Kefauver, who was a first-time Tennessee Democrat, as one of the 10 most admired men, right up there with the Pope and Albert Einstein.
The crime investigating committee, headed by Senator Estes Kefauver, left, swept into New York, uncovering hidden criminal activities. This was a house cleaning that lifted the rugs, indeed.
So, organized crime, yes, the echoes were everywhere, but I also heard some other Hollywood echoes. There was even some Woody Allen. When the Republican Jody Heiss said,
"And it's a shameful mockery of what our purpose is."
And Mark Green of Tennessee said,
"His presence here is a travesty."
I'm like, this is bananas. Literally, Brooke, the courtroom scene from the movie, bananas.
It's a travesty of a mockery of a sham, of a mockery of a travesty of two mockeries of a sham.
But look, what really struck me on Wednesday had nothing to do with courtroom dramas or farces. What struck me was Dickens.
What?
Okay, bear with me. Here was Cohen in his opening statement.
"I am ashamed of my weakness and my misplaced loyalty, of the things I did for Mr. Trump in an effort to protect and promote him. I am ashamed that I chose to take part in concealing Mr. Trump's illicit acts rather than listening to my own conscience."
That was nominally an apology, but as the day progressed, I think it took on a new cast. When Tennessee Republican Jim Cooper asked Cohen why, after so many years, he decided to turn on the president, Cohen restated that apology more as a warning to the president's "see no evil" supporters, a raid on the dais in front of him.
Were they on a dais?
Yeah, it was elevated.
Okay.
"I did the same thing that you're doing now. And I can only warn people, the more people that follow Mr. Trump, as I did blindly, are going to suffer the same consequences that I'm suffering."
It was like, this is your future. It was right out of A Christmas Carol. Cohen was, you know, the ghostly Jacob Marley, and the Republicans were Scrooge.
"I am here to warn you, to save you, if that be possible."
"From what?"
"From such a fate as mine."
"But you were always a good man of business, Jacob. Business.
Mankind should have been my business. Charity, forbearance, benevolence, all were my business, as they should be yours."